Welcome to Inside Ivy Hoops, the podcast about Ivy League basketball from Ivy Hoops Online. I'm IHO editor Mike Tony, joined by IHO writer extraordinaire Rob Brown. Rob, how are you?
I am okay. Found myself on the DL last week, but I've recovered and I'm ready for a whole weekend of Ivy Hoops.
Well, hopefully some Ivy standouts will be joining you coming off of the DL. It's too long a list as it seems to always be every season, especially this time of year. Somehow, it's a pernicious trend that always presents itself, and we'll dig into that a little bit later in the podcast. But wanted to start out by recapping a very interesting Ivy weekend that was. Headlined perhaps by another sweep of Penn by Princeton on the men's side. Really just a sweet weekend in general for Tiger fans, not so much for the red and blue counterparts. But Princeton coming away with a 63-58 win at Jadwin. They won one way at the Palestra, pounding it inside, and they won another way at Jadwin, beating Penn from the 3-point line, really beating them at their own game. It looked early on that Penn had them. It was going very well. You know, here you have this team that started 1-7, you know, it was down 8-0 to a team that has looked really well for the second straight season in non-conference play before an opening loss to Princeton. And then, it went south for Penn from there. But a really, really great effort again from Ryan Schwieger of Princeton. Jalen Llewellyn proving why he's one of the most had been one of the most highly touted recruits coming into the Ivy League in quite some time, and Princeton's shown that it can win multiple ways. What Rob, what was your takeaway from the Tigers completing the a second straight season sweep of the red and blue?
I thought it was an excellent job by Princeton. Penn kind of countered from the week before. I think they brought Jared Simmons in the front court so they could have two guys going up against Richmond or Riri Guza. And, they seemed to work on that. And I think he ended up only with 8 points on the night. But he did get into foul trouble in the second half. But, to his credit, he got 16 rebounds, 6 on the offensive side. And as you pointed out, they beat Penn at Penn's game. You know, if Penn took away the inside on Friday night, then they just, dominated on the outside. They went 11 for 26 from the 3-point line, which was fantastic. And I think what was really, really positive on the offensive side was, they got some contribution from Ethan Wright, Drew Freeberg, and then, late in the game, Jose Morales, when Penn finally made its run late. Morales really had a couple nice plays in there. One, I think, was a defensive job on A.J. Broder, and the other was when it was a 3-point game with about 15 seconds left or so. He drove the lane and got the layup and a foul. So, really nice contributions from some of the lesser stars on the team. So I think if you're Princeton, you got to be really happy. You won two different ways. You beat your arch nemesis. And, better to start off 2-0 than to be 0-2. Not that that prevents Penn from moving forward in terms of Ivy Madness, but again, nicer to start off with the win than to lose those two games.
Yeah, certainly Penn folks would say that it'd be nice to not have to have their team dig out of a hole year after year, but that seems to be the case. Although when you look at the grand scheme of the league, I don't think Penn fans should really complain too much. But yeah, I mean, when you look at the way that game unfolded, certainly Richmond Ariraguzo showed that, you know, he can have a significant impact even when the opponent's priority is shutting him down offensively. I mean, you mentioned the 16 rebounds. He had 4 assists. Some of those boards late were really big in the final 2 minutes, a couple on the offensive end. And, you know, if you're Penn, you know, you were coming in 3-for-23 from deep in the last meeting. And, yeah, I mean, you got beat at your own game pretty much. The thing that concerns me the most is the fact that if you're Penn, you know, you lost this 2 different ways, but the perimeter defense for Penn, when you go back to 2018, the Ivy title run for Penn was one of the nation's best. That was something that kind of didn't get as much attention throughout that run. I think the defense did because people, some folks were surprised that Steve Donahue, with this offensive reputation for great offense, great motion offense, other looks at that end of the floor, that this was a defensive oriented team. And that was really the foundation for that maybe unexpected run, Ivy title run, the success of that team. And this year, you know, it's not coming together. Penn's 3-point percentage is really in the lower echelon of the nation, of 320th best nationally, or at least they were after the loss, worse than the Ivy League. And that's not good in the Ivy League, because the Ivy League is a very analytically driven, three-point conscious league, and you have to be able to guard from deep. We've seen that more and more so in recent years. So we'll see how things play out. I mean, certainly Penn has the personnel to go on a very deep run at an Ivy title, certainly at an Ivy League tournament championship if they're able to get in. But, you know, there are kinks to work out. And, you know, once again, Princeton is the team that exposes them. You know, great coaching job by Mitch Henderson, as you noted, once again. So looking ahead, you know, what did we learn? Did we learn anything about Princeton that we didn't know beforehand, before these 2 games?
Well, I guess, you know, there is that idea of seeing how the last couple of years have played out, is that you probably shouldn't get too down about Penn, and maybe the opposite end is you probably shouldn't get too high on Princeton. You know, right now Princeton seems to have the upper hand in this rivalry, but you know, going forward, yeah, I mean, obviously from the positive side, if they can continue to get that kind of production from Llewellyn, Schwieger, Ariraguzo, they can get good contributions from Wright and Freeburg and Morales and DeRozier off the bench. You know, if they can get nice production inside and outside, if they can play tough perimeter defense, I'm one of those people that thought that Princeton was in the top 4, even in the after the non-conference schedule. I guess the 2 teams' efforts over the last few weeks, maybe I used to have Princeton as a 4, and I think they're closer to, you know, they're probably a 3 now. So I think if you're a Princeton fan, you feel good. You've got smart players, good coaching, talented, you know, a talented threesome at the top. The key for them is to just, you know, shake off the rust from the break they have over finals. Last year, obviously, you know, was chaotic with what happened with Devin Kennedy ending up getting suspended. Obviously, the goal is for everybody to be safe and smart during finals week or finals break. But if they can kind of, you know, just get going, right, you know, when they start hitting Ivy weekends afterwards, I know it's tough with Harvard and Dartmouth starting off, but, you know, if they can split that weekend, you know, I think you're in a good spot as a Princeton fan. 3-1 that's a great start, maybe even 4-0 if things break right. So I think their goal towards Ivy Madness looks pretty positive right now.
You said you had Princeton kind of on the three line or as the three seed. Is Penn down to the four?
For me, yeah. You know, I think your point well taken. You know, like their 3-point defense has really been a problem this year. You know, even against teams like Howard, they still let them shoot pretty well from the 3-point line. And I think what's tough is, you know, Penn's young, and I think we saw this last year that even though they've got Goodman and Broder and Bentley, and Broder obviously had a monster game the other day with the KenPom MVP, 22 points, 13 rebounds, so he was back to himself. And Goodman can certainly, you know, get those points. I do worry a little bit. I think Bentley is, you know, he's obviously not the same player he was. He's still excellent, but he's not the way he was before his injury last year. And then after that, you've got a lot of younger players, especially on the perimeter. You know, Penn's obviously found a way to make it all work, especially with a deep bench as the conference has gone forward over the last couple of years. But, you know, when you have a lot of young players hitting the back-to-back weekends for the first time, I have Penn 4 right now, and I think they'll end up in that area. But, you know, I won't say I'm not nervous for them.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing, too, is, you know, when you're playing against Princeton, you're playing against Yale, you know, these are teams that have, these are teams that like to play slow, you know, slower tempos. Penn, not so much. So, you know, you see battle of tempos, and I think that was maybe more more apparent in the first meeting between Penn and Princeton. The Tigers just slowing things down and winning in isolation and just, you know, kind of bullying their way methodically inside at times. But, you know, battle of tempo is something that comes to mind for Penn as well. Study of contrast against at least some of the Ivies. Just something interesting to note. Maybe a game within a game to a limited extent as conference play continues to unfold.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for Penn, I think the real person to keep an eye on is Jordan Dingell. I mean, he's got amazing talent. You know, super explosive, especially as he drives the lane. 21 points 2 weeks ago against Princeton. But, you know, Princeton found a way to change things around, and I think he only ended up with 4 points the other night. And, you know, he's going to have to face a pretty quick learning curve in league play. It's a different kind of beast than the non-conference schedule. So, ultimately, I think he will figure things out, and he's the, I guess, you know, I don't know if X-Factor is the right term to use again, but as I did a couple weeks ago with some players, but if he can kind of get things back to the way he did in the non-conference schedule and the first Princeton game, then I think ultimately Penn's going to feel very comfortable.
And it was another huge battle of the P's on the women's side. This one coming at the Palestra Saturday afternoon. Penn hung with Princeton in the first half, not so much in the second half as the Tigers jaunted out to a 75-55 win in what really is on paper anyway, you know, the toughest matchup they're going to get in Ivy League play, at least theoretically at Penn, the number two pick in the league, winning by 20 points with authority in the second half. I mean, that bodes well. It doesn't take a lot of analysis to realize that. I mean, they're ranked for a reason, I guess. Bella Allery with a great start to that game. But really, the depth of the Tigers takeaway. Carly Littlefield getting into foul trouble early on. Abby Myers coming up with 14 points in limited action. What were your takeaways, Rob, from a huge win for the Tigers?
The big thing was Taylor Bauer, career highs, 15 points, 13 rebounds. That was the key from my perspective, was the front court battle. We knew it was a potential when we talked 2 weeks ago. Penn is kind of down to a one-person front court, and Alea Parker, something is up with her. We don't know exactly what's going on. McLaughlin has alluded to some maybe like injury that she's recovering from, but she's not the same player she was the first couple years at Penn. And you could see that as the game went on, they just wore her down. Torrey Crawford came off the bench, gave them 13 points, 8 rebounds, a nice effort from her. But it's just not the same as past years where Penn had two all Ivy front court players. And now that front court advantage is completely in Princeton's favor. Penn held in tight at the first, they did a nice job in the first half. Part of that was because, as you mentioned, Carly Littlefield went to the bench for most of the second quarter in foul trouble. But Princeton locked them down defensively in the second half. And, other than Caleb Padilla, who is astonishing, 27 points, even with all the Princeton people keyed on her. She did a great job, but she was basically it. It was like, maybe 1-on-5, and maybe even more when you consider the depth that Princeton has. So it was kind of how I thought about it. I don't know if I thought it was a 20-point difference, but it certainly didn't shock me watching it. And, I think it's an interesting year on the women's side. I think Princeton's head and shoulders at the top, but as we mentioned 2 weeks ago, Yale may just be ahead of Penn right now, and we'll see how things play out over the next couple weeks. Penn certainly didn't, had a similar recipe last night, losing to Villanova by 12. They faltered in the second half. They did not get a lot of front court production. So I think there are some red flags for Penn. They're obviously super talented. I think they'll get into Ivy Madness, but it's not the same Penn team, and it's certainly not the same Princeton team. They're going in two slightly different directions right now.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it and to sum it up. I mean, as far as Alea Parker and her struggles, I guess. I mean, it's. it's always tough when you're talking about college basketball. I mean, to state the obvious, these are, young adults that are, you're under the microscope. You've got a bunch of people watching that are rooting for you, rooting for the institution. When things are going wrong that, maybe they know about, maybe they don't. Credit to her and all of the Ivy, all of the Ivies that are battling through whatever it is, whatever it is that they might be battling through, whether it be injury or any other issues. Kayla Padilla scored 27 out of 55 points. You probably don't want one player to be scoring half of your points. That's never a good recipe for victory. As far as what the pecking order is, is Yale on the same level as Penn? Well, I guess we'll We'll find that out soon enough. Certainly a statement win for Princeton at the Palestra. But that was not the barn burner, certainly not the best game of the afternoon. Simultaneously, Dartmouth pulled out a really stole a victory, you could say, against Harvard up in Hanover. A very clutch finish, fantastic defensive play by Katie Douglas and Annie McKenna in on the finish inside for a conference opening 63-62 win for Dartmouth over the Crimson. Rob, what are your thoughts? Does this change at all how you think of Dartmouth, or is this just an impressive opening win at home?
Yeah, I know we've mentioned this a couple weeks ago, and we talked about how Dartmouth is really one of the scrappier teams in the league. They always play hard, and I think you see that at the beginning of the conference schedule. You know, when they take on Harvard, they've split the last couple. So on some levels, it didn't surprise me. I certainly thought Harvard was going to win, even though this isn't the same Harvard team offensively. They've been playing excellent defense, and Dartmouth is not, statistically, I think they shoot about 32% from three. It's a little bit better than average nationally. I thought Harvard would limit them, but you know, to Dartmouth's credit, they went 13 for 24 from three. And, you do that against most teams in the country, and you got a fighting chance. With that said, you know, they still eked out a one-point win, you know, shooting over 54% from three. They didn't really do well from inside the arc, and they shot about 32%. And that's, again, against a... You know, Janie Bame had a fantastic game, 18 rebounds. But still, they were playing predominantly with one forward. Hats off to Dartmouth, and I think they showed that on any given night they can certainly compete with most of the teams in the conference. Does it change my view going forward? Not significantly. I have to see them consistently hit this well from the outside, them in terms of Ivy Madness, just because, not to take anything away from Dartmouth ultimately, it's just that this is the eighth best conference in the country. And, you know, there are four teams, five teams, six teams really like right now battling. But, I certainly give Dartmouth a fighting chance most evenings.
Yeah, and the way I framed the question was really thinking about it. You know, Dartmouth, is this a case of them just holding serve at home, I guess? But whether you hold, whether you think about it that way or not, I mean, it's still an impressive win, especially getting it done outside the way they did from the outside. I guess it remains to be seen whether or not. You know, can those threes travel? but we'll find out. Switching it back to the men, we want to look ahead to a weekend full of Ivy action here. Starting out with Brown at Yale Friday evening, tomorrow evening. Is this Yale... looking to be the class of the league at this point, certainly statistically they are, analytically they are. They have not played a Division I game since that narrow loss to North Carolina on New Year's Eve. 11-4 Yale is an outstanding defense. Now, you talk about perimeter defense. This is where Yale comes in and where they get it done. Third nationally in defensive 3-point percentage, fourth in effective field goal percentage allowed. They keep teams from crashing the boards. they have the fundamentals are down. You know what the rotation is with James Jones. You know what you're going to get. What do you see from Yale? I mean, how can they press their advantage against a Brown team that looked great in its last Division I action against Rhode Island?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as we've mentioned time and time and again, you know, we know who Yale is. You know, everyone's got their role. Everyone plays very, very well. The only issue I think they have this year is their offensive rebounding is a bit weak. It's one of the 10 lowest in the country, but everything else is very high. You know, I think for Yale, it's making sure they play their game. I think the biggest battle will be the three-point line and the battle on the offensive rebounds for Brown. I think they're ninth in the nation on offensive rebounds and Yale 33rd. So I think if Brown, hopes to win this game, they've got to control that area of the court. I think they also have to hit three-pointers like they did against Rhode Island. So from the defensive side, you know, as you pointed out, Yale's top three in the country. I think they'll be prepared. You play a local rivalry game. Rhode Island may not have taken Brown as seriously. Hunsicker went off, had a great night. I don't expect that. I don't expect the same kind of performance from Yale. I think they know exactly, you know, what the Brown players are capable of, and I think that Coach Jones will not have them have a letdown, especially opening the league up at home. So I think if Yale just does what it's supposed to do, I think things will fall into place. There's a reason that if you look at KenPom, it's a 14-point advantage for Yale heading into the game, and I certainly see that as a possibility. If Yale plays the way they're supposed to, it certainly makes sense that it'll be that kind of a game.
Yeah, Ken Palm giving Brown bulletin board material with just a 9% chance of getting it done at Lee Amphitheater. So flipping the perspective then, if you're Brown, what do what do you do well? You crash the boards well. You have actually a pretty balanced offensive attack, or at least one where you've got several players who can carry the load and get it done. If you're the Bears, how do you try to score a huge upset to start Ivy play?
Yeah, I guess you have to. It all starts with Brandon Anderson, and he has to be healthy. I think you pointed out when we had a private conversation before the podcast that he didn't play in their most recent game against the Division III opponent. So, you got to have he's your spark plug. He's got to be healthy, and he's got to be able to get out in transition and get some quick, easy buckets. Temining Cho has to be able to do a little of everything. He's got to score from the inside. He's got to distribute the ball. Your two stars have to do their thing. And then you've got to get some production, ideally from Hunsicker from three. If not, Josh Howard has to really get some production, especially the way he did in the St. John's game. I think a little bit of a interesting area defensively to look at is Jalen Gainey, tremendous shot blocker. If he can stay on the court, Yale's got a tremendous front court with Atkinson and Bruner, and Matt DeWolf plays a solid inside game, but I don't know if he's up for battling those two by himself. So I think if they can get a lot of production from Jalen Gainey on the defensive side, that could help thwart some of the 2-point production that Yale likes to get.
And moving on to Saturday's slate on the men's side. Dartmouth at Harvard. We were talking a little bit about the DL earlier. We already started to get into it a little bit, of course. A cloud hanging over Harvard with Bryce Aiken and his injury. Cloud hanging over pretty much the whole Ivy League when you think about it. Losing a talent like that. But on Dartmouth side of things, what's the latest? What have you heard about the status of Aaron Wright?
Really unclear. I think there was a message board comment that that he was seen at the women's game on Saturday. He was using crutches. So no other information is out there. But if he's not 100% for Saturday, that's really tough. This isn't the same Dartmouth team that could, you know, bomb away from 3-point land like last year. And, if Rye's not ready to go 100%, you know, then Dartmouth may have to shift away and start throwing from the outside and hope to take advantage of Harvard's weak 3-point defense.
Well, you know, Aaron Rye has, he's coming off of a 18-point performance against Vermont 2 weeks ago. Had has really been scoring in double figures since the last couple of weekends of last season. Maybe an underrated talent for Dartmouth there. If you're Harvard and you don't have Bryce Aiken, how do you become, Noah Kirkwood show to some degree? He's one of the more potent offensive talents in the league, obviously. Had a really solid game a couple games against Massachusetts. George Washington come to mind. Chris Lewis has been performing well as of late. The team seems to be leaning more on him as Ivy play. And I guess, there is no one man show. Even when Bryce Aiken has been in there, typically it's a well-rounded attack. But if you're Harvard, what's your game plan?
Yeah, so, obviously the first thing is to get a healthy Bryce Aiken. And, I guess Ivy fans should keep on the lookout on John Rothstein or Jeff Goodman's Twitter on Friday and Saturday to see if Coach Amick gives any information on that. But, assuming he doesn't play, and I know we talked about this a couple weeks ago at the season preview, Bryce Aiken is that guy that puts a team on his shoulders. He can hit acrobatic shots late. He can get to the free throw line. So if you don't have him, I think one of the keys is to make sure it's not a close game. I think Chris Lewis is going to have an excellent game, but he's also going to have his hands full with Chris Knight. As you pointed out, Noah Kirkwood would be the person I would kind of keep my eye on. Chris Ledlum as well off the bench. But, in the past when Bryce Aiken hasn't gone, Christian Juzang has done more than a capable job. I think he's one of the more underrated players in the league. I think Rio Haskett also has shown a lot of improvement this year. So I think the two of them will be players to keep your eye on. And if the two of them have successful nights or days, from the outside, I think that's going to bode well for Harvard. I think, again, if Aaron Rye doesn't play, that takes away some of the offensive rebounding ability of Dartmouth. They're second in the country. Dartmouth defensive rebounding is second in the country. You take Aaron Rye away from there, and I think that's going to be a big advantage, for Harvard. But assuming he does play and Aiken doesn't play, then I'm going to be keeping my eye on those guys in the backcourt to see if they can do their thing.
And in other Saturday Ivy action, Cornell travels to Columbia to start the home and home between the Empire State Seas. Jimmy Boeheim has been in a boot with a sprained ankle. His status has been unknown for the Ivy opener. I guess how we think about the game, his absence would definitely change the complexion of things. But even with Boeheim playing, it would still be a challenge. Cornell looking for its first Division I win since the opener, the season opener against Binghamton on November 5th. It's been a very frustrating non-conference slate for Cornell, and perhaps Columbia fans can sympathize, because it hasn't really been it's been a tough slog for them too. It hasn't been easy. A lot of close losses for the Lions, which seems to be an annual misery at times for Columbia. These heartbreaking losses late, losing big leads in some of these games. How do you see this game? I mean, these are two teams that desperately need to you would think get this win and then try to build off of it. How do you see this matchup, Rob?
Starting out on the injury front, you've got Boeheim, and then there's always that big question mark about Gabe Stefanini. I have not heard anything that Stefanini. There was always the thought that he could come back in January, but it doesn't seem like he's ready. So that's certainly a disappointment for Columbia. How do I see it? Objectively, I would think Columbia being at home would have a more comfortable chance of winning, but Columbia being Columbia, it'll go down to like a one possession game late. We'll see what happens with the ball in Mike Smith's hands. Assuming Boeheim is at full strength for Cornell, these two guys will both put up their points. I'm looking for who's going to be that additional scorer for Columbia. Who's going to help out? Who's going to help Mike Smith? Is Killingsworth going to be able to hit from the outside? Is Nwege going to be able to control a Brumont from the inside? Cornell's got the weakest defense in the league. If Columbia at home can't exploit that, then there's some big problems. But I do think optimistically that they will be able to, they'll take advantage of Cornell's 340th ranked 3-point defense. I think it was 2 years ago they hit 16 3-pointers. I'm not expecting that Saturday night, but I do think they'll be able to get a lot of production from the outside. And I think they'll be able to handle themselves adequately in the 2-point area. So I do think that Columbia will be able to take advantage of the home crowd, and maybe a recovering Jimmy Boeheim and take control of this game.
Yeah, Nathan Solomon had a good piece on the site about really just where Cornell stands heading into Ivy League play, and Brian Earle just talked about, well, you have some close losses, it can be demoralizing when teams beat up on you, and confidence is such a crucial thing in sports. Not saying anything huge there, but it's confidence that leads to the momentum that you need to start out conference play against a rival, and then pick up an opener that you need to try to get some positive momentum going, where both of these teams seem to be at right now. And then also on Saturday, Penn looking to pick up its third straight win against St. Joseph's. The first matchup in this series with Billy Lang at the helm over at Hawk Hill. It'll be interesting to see if Penn can turn it around. You think they would, given St. Joseph's struggles this season in Lang's first year there. So hopefully Penn can pick it up, continue its recent Big Five success, and live to fight Temple the following weekend in another first year Big Five coach in Aaron McKee. So see how that goes. Flipping over to the women's side, speaking of Big Five action, Penn faded late again, this time to against Villanova on Wednesday night. Another tough game for Penn, not quite able to pull it out. Although these are games now that Penn can win. You know, it's not like it's a moral victory or anything anymore. But another 20-plus point performance from Kayla Padilla, Leah Parker with 10 points in 30 minutes, 3 blocks, also 4 fouls. You know, Phoebe Sterba doing what she does from deep. Not quite enough. So looking ahead to the weekend on the women's side, you know, we got some crucial games just to see what where the teams stand. We talked about Yale before, trying to size up where they're at. They host Brown. What can Brown do to win this?
One thing we you know, when we had that long podcast a couple weeks ago, the one team we forgot to get to was the Brown women's.
That's
team.
Right.
And, you know, I think what are they, 6-7 so far this year? Actually, a pleasant surprise. I think they've had a couple big losses, but I think they've put together a couple nice wins, a better record than I think most of us would have thought heading into the season.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think they've spent a lot more attention on the defensive side. They graduated 3,000 point scorers recently. You know, so they were almost a heavily offensive team, very little defense, and now they're starting to flip the switch. Offensively, they have Justine Gaziano, who's one of the top scorers in the league. She's obviously going to have a big game. There's no doubt about it. She really has to put in a lot of points. Brown doesn't score a lot these days, but they definitely need that. You know, they need some secondary scoring from Leonidas, from Dale, from Mullins. They need at least another big scorer coming out of there. Defensively, boy, they've got to just battle on the rebounds. In some ways, I think they have to. If they can get Emsbo into foul trouble early, I think that will be a really big help. In some ways, the script has been flipped with these two teams. Yale is now, they're a solid defensive team, but they're much more offensively oriented, So which is where Brown was a couple of years ago. I think for Brown, if they can pressure Yale into being inefficient, which is kind of like old Yale, so if Brown can kind of get in their head, maybe get them in foul trouble, get them out of their rhythm, I think that's a big help for them. But you know, a lot of things have to break right. Yale is just playing very, very well, as their recent win in North Carolina. They're a team on a mission. They're deeper than previous years. You know, so I think they're, and I think they see the way the league is unfolding this year, and I think they see, you know, a chance to break in, not just to the top half or return to the top half, but even, as we said earlier in the podcast, you know, getting into the top two. And I think they are not going to overlook Brown over these next 2 weeks.
And then the Saturday brings us the Empire State battle on the women's side, Columbia and Cornell. Kind of a study in contrasts, I suppose, in styles. Certainly Cornell likes to attack inside, you know, play methodically, crash the boards, very physical. They will be the visitors, visiting a Columbia squad that has a lot of weapons, a top three offense statistically in the Ivy League, a team that likes to, you know, can certainly shoot it from deep, best 3-point field goal percentage in the league. How do you, they also defend the line, defend the 3-point line well too, leading the conference in that category as well. How do you see this game playing out? Do you see these teams as fairly even?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. 2 years ago, you would go to this game and see two of the weakest teams in the conference, and it was very sloppy play both weekends. Now you look at these two teams, and these are two of the top teams in the league, and it's, you know, amazing turnaround in such a short period of time. You know, credit to both programs and both coaches. This certainly has the potential to be the game of the weekend in both the men and the women. Divisions. Some contrasting styles. You know, we certainly know that Cornell tends to be methodical. They're an old fashioned team. They like to put it in from two. They don't shoot a lot of 3-pointers. They're not super efficient from three when they do shoot there, but they like to get to the line. They have a high assist rate. They have a high 2-point percentage, and Columbia's, you know, showing that they can kind of hit from everywhere, and they've got a lot more attention to detail on the defensive side this year. What's interesting is this Cornell team does, if Columbia wants to push the tempo, which would be my guess, this year's Cornell team can compete that way. You know, I think, you know, having Shannon Mulroy in the backcourt, you know, has really helped. So I don't think Cornell's going to be overwhelmed if it gets there. For me, I think end result is going to, the most important factor is going to be turnovers. Cornell turns the ball over a lot, and they've done that the last 3 years, as we pointed out a couple weeks ago. I think the key is going to be, can Columbia capitalize on those turnovers? If they can, and, you know, and plus being at home I expect it to be a pretty sizable crowd and a boisterous crowd in the afternoon. If they can do that, I think they'll come away with the win. If Cornell can prevent Columbia from getting a lot of points off turnovers, I think Cornell wins this game. You know, it's a toss-up. I certainly would favor Columbia, but certainly would not shock me if Cornell won on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of the big thing that I'm looking for on the women's side this weekend is how, you know, a battle of styles, and maybe we, you know, maybe we make too much of the stylistic approaches that teams have. Their tendencies, and those can change really quickly depending how a game gets started and the flow of the game early. But yeah, just seeing if we see that study and contrast against each other. Or whether they kind of just meld, depending on turnovers, depending on streakiness of players. If one player gets hot early on either side, and that could mean you know, finding a rhythm inside too, not just from the perimeter, but just seeing which one of those styles is victorious, if indeed we do see that study and contrast play out with both teams playing against each other. It is cool to see that when you have kind of a split screen approach. On the men's side, is there any one big trend or matchup that you're looking for, that you're looking forward to most, a game within a game, maybe, on the men's side?
You know, I even though there's a big point differential there, I still think Brown has a fighting chance against Yale. I think they have gotten better over the last few weeks. And as they showed against Rhode Island, you know, that's a top team. If they could beat Rhode Island handily, you know, a 10-point win against a team that's in the top 70, if they can do that. They certainly can beat Yale. It's certainly not out of the question. So I guess, you know, that's the game I'm most intrigued about on the men's side. You know, from the Penn thing you were mentioning, you know, they've got the 2 weeks against the Big Five competition. The key is for, you know, everybody to kind of get back to where they were. So I'm, you know, I kind of keep my eye on those, but, you know, really my focus will be more on the Friday game, with Yale and Brown. And then on Saturday, you know, the women's game with Cornell and Columbia.
Lots to look forward to for sure. We got this podcast wrapped up in just a little bit more less time than last time you were on the 90-minute extravaganza to open the season. But Rob Brown, thank you so much for coming on the podcast to impart your fantastic knowledge of all things Ivy round ball for us on another show.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it as always. And, you know, always I'm amazed at all the amazing stuff that you bring forward to the table each and every week.
Well, that's very kind. You make it easier, too. That's for sure. take care, Rob.
You too. Take care. Bye.